All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into the, well, kind of quirky world of adverse possession, you know, where you could actually end up owning property just by using it, like openly, continuously, for a certain amount of time.
It's a fascinating concept, isn't it? Almost like legally claiming something that wasn't yours to begin with.
Exactly. And to break it down, we're going to unpack a really interesting case from 1977, Russo v. Stearns Farms Realty, Inc. This one went down in Rhode Island and gives us a real-world glimpse into how adverse possession can play out, especially when we're talking about rural land.
Right, because the rules of the game can change a bit when you move away from, say, dense urban areas with clearly defined boundaries.
For sure. Now, the Russos in this case, they actually ended up winning ownership of some land that, on paper, technically belonged to Stearns Farms Realty.
Yeah.
So the question we're going to grapple with today is, what exactly did the Russos do over all those years that made the court say, yep, this is rightfully theirs now? What kind of moves did they make that basically turned using the land into owning it?
And along the way, we'll be extracting some key insights about adverse possession, especially for anyone out there dealing with properties in those more, shall we say, wide open spaces.
Sounds good. So want to set the stage for us.
Like, right.
Where are we? Who are the players? What's at stake?
All right, so picture this. We're in Jamestown, Rhode Island. The Russos, they have their property right, but then there's this adjacent land to the south and to the west that's going to be the center of this whole legal showdown.
Okay, so just to be clear, this adjacent land, it's not like a vast wilderness. This is land that Stearns Farms Realty, the defendants, had the official deed to. They were like the legal owners on paper.
Exactly. But here's where it gets interesting. The Russos' own deed, the one for their property, it showed that their southern boundary line ran just 3 inches from their house.
3 inches? Talk about cutting it close.
Right. So that sliver of land right next to their house, and then this whole other section stretching westward, that's what was being fought over, even though Stearns Farms Realty technically had the paperwork to say they owned it.
Okay, so we've got the Russos living right up against this boundary line, and then this land next to them that Stearns Farms Realty legally owns. But what's the Russos' claim here? Did they just suddenly decide, hey, let's grab that land?
Not at all. We're talking decades here. For years, they acted like they owned this disputed land. Not in a speaky way, but just in how they lived, how they used it. It was this ingrained belief that it was theirs, and that belief manifested in their actions over time.
And, spoiler alert, those actions ended up being crucial to them winning the case.
Absolutely. It wasn't just a thought in their heads, you know. They actually did things on that land that showed anyone watching that they were claiming it as their own.
So give us the play-by-play. What kind of moves did they make?
All right, let's start with the western part of this disputed land. There was already a shed there, but they took that shed and completely revamped it, turned it into a pony stall for their kids.
Okay, that's starting to sound a little more like ownership-ish, right? Not just borrowing someone's land for a bit.
Right. They also got rid of an old outhouse that was on that western portion, filled in the hole, kept the whole area, like, cleared up, maintained it as if it was an extension of their yard. And they didn't stop there. They put up a corral fence, planted grass.
So they're really putting down roots, literally, on this land that's not technically theirs. And I'm guessing Stearns Farms Realty didn't miss all of this, right?
Now, that's a whole other part of the story we'll get to. But first, let's look at the southern part of the disputed land. The Russos, they mainly use this section as a driveway. Think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You're driving on someone else's land day after day to get to your property without asking permission. That sends a message.
Yeah, it says, I own this.
Exactly. And it wasn't just practical. They also used that southern portion for, like, family stuff, setting up swing sets for the kids, having picnics. It was all part of their living space.
So they're really weaving this disputed land into their everyday family life. It's not just some abstract piece of property to them.
Right. And here's another key detail. The trial court, they actually found, based on witness testimony, that the Russos had consistently cleared and maintained the land up to 70 feet south of their house.
Wow, 70 feet. That's a significant chunk of land they were actively using. But okay, let's talk law now. Because doing all these things, it doesn't automatically mean you legally own the land, right? There's got to be a legal framework for this whole adverse possession thing.
Right. And like most states, Rhode Island has very specific legal hoops you got to jump through to win an adverse possession claim. You can't just stroll onto some land and say, mine now.
Okay, so walk us through it. What's the checklist in Rhode Island? What do you have to prove?
So you got to show that your possession of the land was actual, open, notorious, hostile, under a claim of right, continuous, and exclusive.
Okay, that's Quite a list. What do all those terms even mean?
We'll unpack them as we go, don't worry. But the key thing is, you got to prove all 7 of these elements, and it has to have been going on for at least 10 years.
10 years? That's a long time. So you're telling me if I mow my neighbor's lawn for 10 years straight, it automatically becomes mine?
Not quite. Remember, all 7 elements have to be there, and the burden of proof is on the person making the claim, so in this case, the Russos. They had to prove all of this by what's called a preponderance of clear and positive evidence.
Clear and positive evidence. That sounds intense. What's the difference between that and, like, the usual preponderance of evidence you hear about in legal cases?
Good question. Preponderance of the evidence basically means more likely than not. But clear and positive evidence is a higher bar. It means a court wants to see strong, convincing evidence, not just, you know, a hunch or a possibility.
So the Russos really had to bring their A game to court. They couldn't just say, oh yeah, we kind of use the land sometimes.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned something earlier that brings us to a really important point about adverse possession in rural areas. You were asking about mowing the lawn for 10 years, and that touches on the whole idea of continuous possession.
Right, because the Russos, they weren't on that disputed land 247 for 10 years straight. So how does that work?
Well, here's where the rural context comes in. Courts understand that how you use and maintain rural land is different from, say, a tiny city lot. Continuous possession in a rural setting is interpreted with more flexibility. You don't need to be there every second of every day.
So using a driveway regularly but not, like, living on it?
Mm-hmm.
That could still count as continuous.
Exactly. Or things like clearing brush a few times a year, using the land for seasonal activities. The key is, are you using it like a typical owner of similar rural land would?
That makes sense. You wouldn't expect someone to be out having a picnic in a blizzard just to maintain their adverse possession claim.
Right. Now, Stearns Farms Realty, they obviously weren't just going to sit back and watch the Russos take their land.
Right. They put up a fight, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
What were their arguments?
Oh, yeah. They definitely fought back. One of their main arguments was that the Russos' use of the land wasn't exclusive. They basically tried to say that other people could have used the land, too, so the Russos weren't in sole control.
Interesting. So how did the court respond to that? How did they decide that the Russos' use was exclusive enough?
Well, the court pointed out this interesting detail about no hunting signs that Stearns Farms Realty had put up. These signs, they were in a wooded area of the property, not on the specific pieces of land the Russos were using, you know, where they built the pony stall, cleared the brush, had the driveway, their picnic spot.
Ah, so it's not just about generally claiming a huge chunk of land. It's about what you're doing on the specific pieces you want to claim through adverse possession.
Exactly. Stearns Farms Realty might have been asserting some control over the whole property, but they weren't actively challenging what the Russos were doing on those specific parcels.
Okay, that makes sense. What else did Stearns Farms Realty argue?
Their other big argument was that the Russos' use wasn't continuous as the law requires. They probably pointed to times when the land wasn't being actively used.
Right. Like we talked about before, no 247 picnics.
Exactly. But again, the court applied that more flexible standard for rural land and basically said, look, temporary breaks in use, especially when it's normal for that type of property, that doesn't automatically mean you lose your adverse possession claim.
So it all comes back to that true owner test, right?
Okay.
Was the Russos' use of the land in line with how someone who actually owns that type of property would use it?
Exactly. Were they treating it like their own in a way that made sense for that type of land? And all those actions, building, maintaining, using it for their family, it all painted a pretty clear picture.
So the trial court sided with the Russos, but this is where things get even more interesting. Stearns Farms Realty, they didn't give up. They appealed that decision.
Oh, they appealed it all the way to the Rhode Island Supreme Court.
Wow, taking it to the big leagues. But I'm guessing there's a reason we're focusing on the trial court's decision, right?
Yeah, there is. And it has to do with this concept called appellate deference. Basically, the Rhode Island Supreme Court, they gave a lot of weight to the factual findings that the original trial judge had already made.
Hold on, appellate deference. We got to unpack that. What does that mean for someone who might not be a legal eagle?
Basically, it means that when you appeal a case, the higher court, they're not going to completely redo everything, start from scratch. They respect the fact that the trial judge, they were the ones who heard all the evidence directly, saw the witnesses, judged their credibility, and made decisions about what evidence to believe.
Right, because the trial judge is basically on the front lines, right? They're seeing the whole thing unfold in real time.
Exactly. So, unless the trial judge made some obvious legal mistake or their factual findings were just completely out there, the appellate court is usually going to stick with what the trial judge decided.
So they're not going to second guess every little detail. They trust the trial court's judgment on the facts of the case.
Right. Think of it like this. The trial judge, they watch the whole movie, right? But the appellate court, they're just reading the script.
I like that analogy. So in this case, what did the Rhode Island Supreme Court do? Did they just rubber stamp the trial court's decision?
Well, they upheld a key finding of the trial judge that the Russos had continuously cleared and maintained that southern portion of the land up to 70 feet from their house. Even if Stearns Farms Realty had arguments against it, the trial judge had heard it all, weighed the evidence, and made a decision. And because there was witness testimony to back up that 70-foot boundary, the Supreme Court, they weren't going to overturn that finding. They deferred to the trial court's judgment on the facts.
Okay, so big picture time. What are the main takeaways here for our listeners who are trying to wrap their heads around adverse possession, especially in a rural context?
All right, here are some golden nuggets to remember. First off, you got to hit all seven of those elements we talked about for adverse possession in Rhode Island: actual, open, notorious, hostile, under claim of right, continuous, and exclusive, and for the full 10 years. Miss even one, and your claim is toast.
So it's not enough to just be using the land. You got to meet all those very specific legal requirements.
Exactly. Second, that continuous use requirement, remember, it's interpreted with more flexibility when it comes to rural properties. Courts get that you're not going to be out there having a bonfire every night in the middle of winter.
Right. It's got to be realistic for how people actually use that type of land.
Right. Third, that clear and positive evidence standard, it's serious business. You need strong, convincing evidence to prove your claim. Your word alone isn't enough.
It's got to be more than just, oh yeah, we totally use the land, trust me.
Exactly. And lastly, that trial court judge. Their role is huge. They're the ones who see and hear everything firsthand. And their factual findings, those are tough to overturn on appeal. The higher courts really respect those findings unless there's a clear reason not to.
So the Russo v. Stearns Farms case, it shows us that using land openly and exclusively for a long time, even if you don't have the legal deed, can actually lead to you legally owning it. If you tick all the boxes of adverse possession, you can potentially win ownership even against the person who has the official title.
Exactly. It's not just about plopping yourself down on a piece of land. It's about demonstrating that you're acting like the owner, doing things that a real owner would do, and doing it consistently, openly, and for a good chunk of time. And this case really underscores the importance of what happens at the trial court level, those initial findings about what actually happened on the land. Those are the building blocks of your case.
This whole concept of adverse possession, it really makes you look at land differently, doesn't it? Like, who's using it? How are they using it? And could they be building a case for ownership without us even realizing it?
It's a fascinating reminder that property law is often about more than just pieces of paper. It's about how people interact with land over time.
Food for thought for all of us.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into adverse possession. Join us next time when we'll be.